choices you make with your lifestyle, your money, every single day, influence your future. It is time to fight to make it better. This podcast is dedicated to you, to sharing ideas that you can use to take ownership of your financial future. Most Americans have little or no net worth. By being purposeful with what we earn, I know we can change that, and we must change that. I want you to learn this game. I want you to be better educated about your money. I want you to live a better life. Welcome to Money is Personal, the Briggs Financial Podcast. Let's go! Salutations, greetings, and hello. My name is Stephen Briggs. I'm chairperson and CEO of Briggs Financial Incorporated. Welcome to Money is Personal, episode number 156, Healthy Money Habits for Partners. Before we dig into this week's episode, two things. Number one, if you have not already liked, subscribed, followed this podcast, I hope you do so. Whether you know on whatever your favorite podcast platform is, we're all over the place. By the way, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, Player FM, and iHeartRadio. You can also find us on the Briggs Financial website, BriggsWealth.com. Find us on Facebook, Instagram. Follow us for more tips and tricks. The other thing I'm going to do is this is actually the first of a three-part series talking about different aspects of relationships and money and so forth. This is, you know, so this is obviously the first episode. We'll have two more coming up here. The second one being Don't Say I Do Until You Listen to This. And our capstone is Marriage and Money for Dummies. So one, if you've chosen to take that plunge and form a lifelong partnership legally, then we'll talk about those aspects as well. So you got a couple more to look forward to here. But it all starts with healthy money habits for partners. And it does not matter if you are at the beginning of your relationship or if you've been married for many years. This is a great episode to get jumping into here. And the reason why is this, because, and we work with, as financial planners, we work with lots of couples. And what I find about couples in general is that it's, you know, anytime you're in a relationship, and I'm going to probably focus more on the beginning aspect of this for a bit here, but there are a lot of principles that carry through. It's enjoyable and exciting to learn different things you and your partner share as interests. It's fun doing stuff together and, you know, seeing the world and eating and traveling or whether you're both big board gamers and love playing board games with your friends, or maybe that's, maybe we're going to concerts or whatever it is. It's very, that when you think about romance and relationships and having a partner and sharing life, a lot of those fun things and wonderful things come to mind. Maybe it's cuddling up at the fireplace with a glass of wine, having a wonderful meal at home, whatever it might be for you. But the kick is this: in order to function together effectively day in and day out, at some point you kind of have to get to the nitty gritty of what you are as adults. Outside of all the really cool fun stuff, you got to do laundry, you got to keep the house clean, you got to pay bills, and I think it's important for partners to know what each other value and where you want aspects of your life to go. And the reality of it is, for most things that people want to be able to do, whether that's travel, whether that's buy a home, whether that's retire at not 85 years of age, or maybe even, take a step back earlier in life, not feel like you have to work as hard into your 60s and 70s. Maybe you want to start a business or help a nonprofit or whatever it is it may be. Money oftentimes is an underlying requirement for those things to happen. But there are some real stigmas and hurdles to, you know, that you may have to overcome in having some of these, you know, these types of conversations with anyone, let alone your partner. Just to give you a little background, I mean, when I was growing up, it was taboo in our household to talk about money. And to be very clear, we were not well off by any measure, but it was just ingrained in me as a kid. It was rude to converse about it. And granted, when you're a kid, you're you may talk about in a very rudimentary way or a blunt way, and talking about how much money you make or having that as a one-off conversation can still be pretty unappreciated. But the problem is, what happens if you and the person you're dating or married to has different attitudes and values toward money? Well, this can create a great deal of conflict and a pain point. And sometimes that, when we say conflict and a pain point, I'm not talking that it will necessarily result immediately in full-blown argument, though it can. But for a lot of people, I notice that it's kind of like a sore or a blister. It just never seems to go away. And it just kind of compoundingly gets more and more irritating all the time. All the way up to having feelings of insecurity. Feeling unsafe around someone because of how they behave with money. It can define the relationship and, frankly, in some cases, destroy the relationship and potentially destroy you in terms of your confidence and your self-worth as an individual if someone else that you're dating or someone else you're married to makes decisions that take away your individual power and agency. So it can be, it's not just this thing, it's not a big deal. It is a big deal. It is a big deal. And when you have something that has that much power and agency across virtually every aspect of how you live and where you want to go in life, comes the responsibility of needing to have regular conversations about it and making certain you and your partner are on the same page. So that said, if you've never talked about money before with your partner, it's been a long time. And mind you, if you're married and haven't had these conversations, don't feel bad. That is far more common than not, that households do not have these sorts of very open, transparent, sometimes blunt conversations about money. But if you've not had this type of talk before with your partner, and honestly, I don't care if you've been dating, 6 months or 6 years, I think it's important to start building that habit now. And here's some tips on how to do that. Number one, let your partner know in advance that you want to talk about personal finances and what is important to you. Please avoid this being some dinner you're already going out, or you're with friends, probably won't do it with friends, but you're going out, you decide to go out to, have a nice meal and go see a movie. Don't spring this up at dinner. Please don't do that. Please let them know in advance, hey, I want to sit down and talk with you about our finances, and I want to learn more about where you're at and where you're coming from, and I want to tell you where I'm at and where I'm coming from, because it's important to me that we support each other and we're aligned when it comes to our goals and our attitudes about our money. I think that's a reasonable prompt to approach this. If someone's concerned about having that conversation, I would be concerned about dating them, because that tends to say, "Hey, they're gonna not to say that a little bit of apprehension's like the worst thing in the world, but at the same time, there has to be a willingness to talk about this, because if there isn't, how is the relationship going to progress? Where can it possibly go? If you don't know where they're sitting financially, because I'll say this, if you plan to marry them, or if you're marriage minded, then, at some point you're this is coming up, or you're marrying blind into potentially a really awful partnership. It'd be like buying a business and not looking at the books to make sure that there isn't just a pile of debt underneath and the business is not making money or whatever. You wouldn't do that. And a marriage is exactly that when it comes to your finances. You are joining up in a variety of ways, including in many cases, some or all of the liabilities, depending on what state you're living in. So that's a pretty big deal. That said, avoid it being a surprise conversation. Set up a deliberate time. Have a money date. Have your first money date. And so, you plan to go out, but before that, let's spend 45 minutes. Let's spend an hour. And let's talk about our finances a little bit first. Number two, be prepared to talk about your past experiences with money. Be prepared to talk about how you grew up. and what you've got going on and what you think healthy money habits are. Talk about your financial goals, but importantly, and perhaps even more importantly than you talking about your goals, listen to theirs. Listen to their attitudes and behaviors and what they're hoping to do. And that could be paying off debt. That could be building emergency savings, getting down payment savings going. Maybe that's investing or retirement or other goals. And the idea here, especially in an initial conversation, may not be sharing all the details and numbers, although it's fine if you do. But you're trying to understand where your partner is coming from and for them to understand where you are coming from. And this is where the listening part is really important, because I think we're very good at sharing things we like to share about ourselves, but it's really, really, really important to make sure you also get your partner to talk about where they're coming from, so you have a clear understanding and can start to process, are we, you know, how closely aligned are we on our attitudes with this? You know, number three in this tip process, at some juncture, you should ask them about their credit score. Is it excellent? Is it good? Or are there issues? If there are, what are they doing to work on them? Because here's the kick. You get married and you try to buy anything. If one of you has a great credit score and the other doesn't, well, then that could be one person applying for the mortgage and only being able to consider that person's income. Well, that's really terrible if you're relying on both your incomes to qualify for a mortgage, but only one of you has the credit required to qualify. That's a bad time, and that has happened with clients where they've gotten, married, then they come see us, and that's what's happened. And in many cases, it just takes time and work on helping build up the other partner's credit score through paying down debt, through not defaulting on payments or being behind on payments and saving money, having to work on all the basics. When all of that could have been worked on in advance prior to getting married. And by the way, I'm a big fan of having some requirements with respect to this before you get married. And so next episode 157, we'll talk about that a little bit. So if you're wondering, should I be, setting up some qualifications or, thoughts on barriers to entry to the marriage land? The answer is probably. Because once you do get married, in a lot of ways, your finances and your financial decisions become very intertwined, and it can get rather ugly. Unentwining them is very difficult, but living with someone that has not only very different attitudes, but frankly isn't in as nearly strong of a position as you are, it's a bad time. And so asking these detailed questions, if people think that's forward or, well, that's private to me, well, that's fine, but that will limit what you want to do with them, I assure you. If they're not willing to share those things, that probably means they're pretty ugly. If they are pretty ugly, is that someone you want to have a long-term partnership with? I would argue not. Number four, as we talked about, apart from having this initial money date, make it a point to have money dates every few weeks. Not months, not years, weeks. So maybe once a month where you talk about your finances and where things are for maybe 45 minutes to an hour before going out. This, by the way, is exactly how we structure financial planning relationships. We work with our clients monthly. If money's so darn important to everything we do, which I hate to say it, but it kind of is, then having an hour conversation once a month is a really good habit. And whether and where we as planners come in, and this isn't meant to advertise, this is meant to explain the role of a planner in general, though we certainly would love your business. But the big role of a planner is, hopefully to, kind of mediate those conversations, direct those conversations in a constructive manner. Sometimes it's to help comprehend and listen to what each person has to say, finding areas of agreement, helping work through areas of disagreement, and making sure everyone recognizes these conversations are to make sure everyone's on the same side. It's not a you versus them. It's all of us working together. And I think a planner can really draw out that let's all work together on these shared goals and ideas. And that's a pretty cool thing. In those conversations, though, if it's just the two of you, share your, now don't just share your challenges and where you think you could have done better. Share your successes as well. If your partner is working on paying off credit card debt, you're working on paying off credit card debt, and you make meaningful progress in a month, share that. Look at that. That's a great thing. That should be celebrated. And that exercise can be a very supportive conversation. Now, coupled with that, tip number 5, keep your purchases out in the open. In our house rule in the Briggs household, and even being married, several years, our household rule is that anything over $100 warrants a discussion. And the thing about our $100 rule, I'm going to take a sip of coffee here. It isn't about so much asking for approval or permission, but it's about raising awareness and giving each other an opportunity to provide feedback. Sometimes that feedback is just a vote of confidence. It's a little bit of support. Sometimes that feedback is, hey, maybe there's a better way to do this that you hadn't thought of that doesn't cost as much money or gets you to a better outcome. And sometimes there's a concern about something that's on the horizon that, hey, I know you're thinking about buying this, but what about the car repair coming up or the tags coming due on the vehicles? Or, hey, we've got X or Y or whatever else is going on. Maybe we need to sequence this or hold off on this for a bit. But that type of feedback, it's not there to say, to be a punching bag anytime you want to buy anything. But it's a opportunity to actually be supportive and kind of, two heads are better than one on it. I actually find in some cases, too, that especially when people have worked on their spending for a while, that oftentimes they'll put off an expense or look at alternatives that are not as high of quality and would not be as good of a fit. And that's where a partner can actually come in, or a financial planner can come in for that matter, and say, hey, I know that you're trying to save some money here, but really the $200 version of that is so much better than the $50 or $75 version of that. Why, where you'd have to buy, and that might be an article of clothing, that might be a piece of equipment where it's like, yeah, you can buy that $50 or $75 version, but you're going to have to replace it 10 times. Or if you bought the $200 version, you're going to love it more, and you're not going to have to replace it at all over that period of time. So you're not only, you're saving money and you're getting a better quality product. But a lot of times when we get into a thrift mindset, we lose sight of the fact that sometimes that quality piece can really, can actually offset the monetary cost in a big way. One of the things that in our household in the last year or so that we purchased was a new dishwasher. And it would have been very easy to just go to the local big box store, spend $700 or $800, get a dishwasher and install and whatever. And in a 10 or so years time, we'd be getting rid of it and getting a new one. Well, I did a little bit of homework and I actually found that Miele makes a dishwasher where the low-end dishwasher runs about double that cost, about $1,600. But I found that it had a number of benefits. I found it was 20 decibels quieter than our old one, which 20 decibels, by the way, you're talking 100 times quieter than the old dishwasher. It really is. It is quite quiet. The other part of what I found, though, was the Miele has such a it's so energy conservative compared to the old dishwasher that over the life of the dishwasher, we would actually pay for our dishwasher outright, where the other, that was definitely not the case. It would have been a lot more energy and water consumptive and would have cost us more money to run in the long run than buying the more expensive dishwasher to begin with. The third thing I found was that the Miele was just way more durable, average lifespan on it being about 20 years, where a typical dishwasher, that's 10 to 15. So all of that said, my wife had sat there and said, we're just going to go buy whatever it is over at big box store, you miss an opportunity to have your partner come with some experience and some homework and go, now, wait a minute, there may be a better way to do it. And it may be a little more money up front now, but saving a whole lot on the back end costs later. And by the way, that Miele dishwasher, the best clean dishes of my life. Not close. I will scream from the mountaintops about that darn dishwasher. It's probably the best appliance purchase I've ever made. That's, again, where your partner, where two heads can be better than one. And having those conversations is, you don't feel like someone's crimping your ability to spend or get a thing you want. But it does, you know, it does promote a degree of accountability and making certain that you're being smart with those decisions. That's all. Number six, that all said, all these bullet points aside, apart from having these conversations where you talk, be waiting for those opportunities to listen and be listening for those warning signs as well. The things that your partner may not be saying. So if you're having these conversations and your partner is consistently not making progress on their finances, or if they're carrying a bunch of debt and it just doesn't seem to be paying down, going away, there's some real issues there. And if you choose later on down the road to get married to that, you're now going to likely be stuck with those issues as well, whether that's the debt, whether that's the, poor spending habits, whatever it might be. You're going to be tied right to it at the hip. And the thing is, you don't need to go into these conversations particularly defensive, but you got to be aware that if your partner has unhealthy financial habits, the more you are around them and their friends, the more likely it is, frankly, that you're going to get dragged into their financial quagmire. You know, and the way I like to describe it is this: it's, you can have your finest clothes on, your finest dress or suit or whatever, and you can have your perfume or cologne. But if you go and stand in a garbage dump for a couple hours, you don't have to touch anything. But if you just stand there for a couple hours and then walk out, you're going to smell terrible. That's what happens with people's finances as well. Your decision-making, your mindset, if you're around other people doing a thing long enough, it becomes increasingly likely that you are also going to adopt at least some, if not all, of the same habits. And that's just it. And this is a really poor foundation then for a long-term relationship, let alone a marriage. So that said, I think it's really important to not just watch for signs of success, but when you're seeing a lack of it or hearing about other issues, there need to be alarm bells going off going, you know, is this something I really want to be around for the long run? Is this going to be healthy and good for me? Or am I leading myself down a path of, you know, they say the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Well, let's talk about some of that too. I think it's important, whether you live apart or together, for you to each maintain autonomy with your finances, not only for legal reasons such as custody of assets, but personal accountability and avoiding situations that can make someone, including yourself, feel entrapped in a relationship. I think loaning money is one of the worst ways of really shooting yourself in the foot in the relationship. Because what it does in that entrapment situation is people feel like in order for me to get paid back, I'm going to have to stay with this person that maybe I don't want to be in a relationship with anymore for whatever reason. So by the way, avoid lending money to your partner. When you become the financier to your lover, it clouds the roles of the relationship. You're no longer just their, you know, boyfriend or girlfriend or you know, fiance or whatever. You're their banker. And the tensions that can create, even unintended, can be disastrous. It also can continue to enable bad money habits. Because when you lend money to them, that gives them permission to keep doing the naughty things that put them in the position to need to do this again. Which again goes back to building a poor financial foundation for a continued partnership. So when you see bad money habits from your partner, believe them. And just like any other really, you know, challenging quality or you know, down, you know, quality to your partner, don't think you can fix that by getting married. Oh, if only stay with them longer, only if we commit deeper, then they'll fix their finances. No. No. It only gets worse. Not better once you're married, because now you're legally bound to the choices they make. They go and open up a credit card and blow a bunch of money. Guess who's also stuck on that? In many cases, you. This varies from state to state and so forth, but slightly, but by and large, it's, you know, you're married and they have a pile of debt on the old card. You get divorced, you're going to have half of it come back to you. You really got to trust this person when you decide to go down that road. Again, don't say I do until you listen to this is next time. So if you're looking for it and going, uh-oh, is there a whole checklist? Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, there is. But when you see bad habits from your partner, believe them. Believe them. And prepare yourself for that. Like, if you're, you know, prepare yourself mentally, you know, to have these sort of expectations that if these things aren't happening and or aren't progressing, you really got to have kind of a mindset that's perfectly okay with walking out. And they can be a great human being in so many ways, but you're going to have a very unhappy time at some point when their persistent bad behavior and bad attitudes when it comes to money come back and haunt you in a way that you don't necessarily expect, but can completely it can make you wanting to live the life you want to live very difficult, and that can make you very sad as a result. So end on a more positive note, because I know I've gone on north of 25 minutes, and there's a bit of we'll just say a cloud in some of these, you know, thinking about, you know, making sure you're communicating effectively. And that's just it. In the heart of all these ideas and tips is a key theme. And that theme is communication. Making the time and space available to both share with your partner and, more importantly, to listen to them. To ask open-ended questions and get their thoughts and feelings about finances and money can strengthen your relationship and can help you align you and your partner's behaviors and goals. This can be a great unifier, actually. It can also help protect you from cementing a partnership with someone who cannot or will not develop healthy money habits, avoiding a potentially catastrophic situation for both of you down the line. The whole should be greater than the sum of its parts, but that only happens if you communicate regularly, aligning your actions with your goals, and regularly following up to see how are things progressing. That's how you and your partner can build and maintain a framework that supports what you both want to see for your future together. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Money is Personal. Please make sure to check all 155 other episodes of Money is Personal at the Briggs Financial website, BriggsWealth.com, or wherever your favorite podcast is. My name is Stephen Briggs, chairperson and CEO of Briggs Financial Incorporated. Have a terrific week. Be safe, be well, and we'll catch you with a fresh episode next week. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to Money is Personal, the Briggs Financial podcast. Please follow Briggs Financial on Instagram and Facebook for more terrific personal financial stories and ideas. And check out our firm's website at www.briggswealth.com to schedule a free consultation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. This information is provided for informational and educational purposes only. Briggs Financial believes the information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but does not guarantee the accuracy of the information being provided. This information is not meant to be a complete summary or statement of all available data for making financial or investment decisions, and does not constitute a recommendation. Please note that the information provided may include references to concepts that have legal, accounting, and tax implications. It is not to be construed as legal, accounting, or tax advice, and is provided as general information to you to assist in understanding the issues discussed. This information is not meant as a financial or investment advice pertaining to your personal situation. The selection of appropriate investment or planning options and or strategies should be made on an individual basis after consultation with appropriate legal, tax, or financial advisors. Nothing contained herein is intended as a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any product or service mentioned, and they may not be suitable for all investors.